I can't stay upright. The pain's too much. I sit beside her. She wipes her cheeks. It's the first time I've seen Ringer cry. I've never seen her smile, and probably never will. But now I've seen her cry. That's messed up. You didn't have a choice, I tell her. Digging up those bodies must have gotten to her. And anyway, they don't know the difference, right? She shakes her head. Oh, zombie. It isn't too late, Ringer. We can call it off. Sullivan can't do this without you. She'd have nothing to do if you hadn't stepped in front of Walker like that. Maybe I wouldn't have if you trusted me with the truth. The truth, she echoes. The important word here is trusted. I trust you, zombie. Funny way of showing it. She shakes her head. That dumb zombie, wrong again. I know you won't tell. She stretches out her legs, and a plastic container flops from her chest onto her thighs. The bright green liquid inside it sloshes. It's a jug of antifreeze. A capful should be enough, she says, so softly I don't think the words are directed at me. The 12th system, it'll protect me. Protect me. I grab the jug from her lap. God damn it, Ringer. You didn't already drink this, did you? Give that back, zombie. I let out my breath. I'll take that as a no. You told me what happened, but you didn't tell me how. Well, you know. She twirls a hand in the air. The usual way. Okay, I deserve that. His name was Razor. She frowns. No, his name was Alex. The recruit who shot Teacup. For me. So I could escape. The one who helped Vosh set you up. Yes. And then Vosh kind of set the two of you up. She gives me the patented impassive Ringer stare. What does that mean? Vosh left him with you that night. He must have known, Razorhead, that leaving the two of you alone might lead to... That's crazy, zombie. If Vosh thought that for a second, he never would have left Alex to guard me. How come? Because love is the most dangerous weapon in the world. It's more unstable than uranium. I swallow. My throat is dry. Love. Yes, love. Can I have that back now? No. I could take it from you. She's staring at me across a space no thicker than a fist, with eyes only slightly lighter than the dark around them. I know you could. I tense. I have a feeling she could knock me out with a flick of her little finger. You want to know if I loved him. You want to ask me that, she says. It's none of my business. I don't love anyone, zombie. Well, that's okay. You're still young. Stop that. Stop trying to make me smile. It's cruel. There's a knife twisting in my gut. The pain makes the bullet wound feel like a mosquito bite. For whatever reason, whenever I'm around this girl, pain follows, and not just the physical variety. Being intimately acquainted with both kinds, I'd rather be shot a dozen times than have my heart torn in half. You're a prick, she informs me. She pulls the jug from my hands. I always thought so. She unscrews the cap and fills it halfway to the lip. The liquid shimmers a neon green. Their color. This is what they've done, zombie. This is the world they've made, where giving life is crueler than taking it. I am being kind. I am being wise. She raises the cup toward her lips. Her hand shakes. The bright green fluid sloshes over the edge and runs over her fingers. And in her eyes, the same darkness that floods my core. She doesn't pull away when I wrap my fingers around her wrist. She doesn't unleash her enhancement upon me and tear my head off my shoulders. She offers hardly any resistance when I force her hand down. I'm lost, zombie. I'll find you. I can't move. I'll carry you. She topples sideways onto me. I wrap my arms around her. I cup her face. I run my fingers through her hair. The darkness slips. It cannot hold. Chapter 53. We're heading back to the hole when Cassie and the kids emerge from the basement of the demolished safe house, loaded down with blankets. Zombie, Nugget calls out. He races over, the stack of blankets in his arms bobbing up and down as he runs. He pulls up when he gets a close look at Ringer's face. Right away, he knows something's wrong. Only dogs read faces better than little kids. What is it, Private? I ask. Cassie won't let me have a gun. I'm working on that. His face screws up. He's dubious. I poke him in the arm with a loose fist and add, let me bury Ringer first, then we'll talk about weapons. Cassie comes up, half leading, half dragging Megan by the wrist. I hope she hangs on tight. I have a feeling if she lets go, that girl's taken off. Ringer jerks her head toward the garage. In there. And says, 10 minutes until the chopper. How do you know? Sullivan asks. I can hear it. Cassie shoots me a look, accompanied by a raised eyebrow. Get that? She says she can hear it. Well, all anyone else can hear is the wind driving over the barren fields. What's the hose for? She asks me. So I don't black out or suffocate, Ringer answers. I thought you were, what did you call it, enhanced? I am, but I still need oxygen. Like a shark, Cassie says. Ringer nods. Like that. Sullivan leads the kids into the garage. Ringer drops into the hole and lies flat on her back in the dirt. I pick up the rifle where she dropped it and lower it toward her. She shakes her head. Leave it up there. You sure? She nods. Her face is bathed in starlight. I catch my breath. What? She asks. I look away. Nothing. Zombie. I clear my throat. It's not important. I just thought, for a minute there, flashed across my mind. Zombie. Okay, you're beautiful. That's all. I mean, you want her to know. You get sentimental at the weirdest times. Hose. I drop one end down. She closes her mouth over the opening and gives me the thumbs up. I can hear the chopper now. Faint, but growing louder. I shovel the dirt over her, sweeping it into the hole with my right hand while I hang onto the hose with my left. She doesn't need to say the words. I can read them in her eyes. Hurry, zombie. The sickening sound of the dirt hitting her body. I decide not to look. I watch the sky as I bury her, gripping the end of the hose so hard my knuckles turn white. The nearly endless number of ways this can go wrong races through my mind. What if there's a full squad on board that chopper? What if it isn't just one Black Hawk, but two, or three, or four? What if, whatever? I'm not going to make it back to the garage in time. Ringer is completely covered now, but I'm out in the open with a shot-up leg and 100 yards to cross before the chopper, which I can see silhouetted against the backdrop of stars, a black knot against the glittering white, is in range. Never tried to run with a bullet in my leg. Never had to. Guess there's a first time for everything. I don't make it very far. Maybe 45, 50 yards? I pitch forward, landing face first in the dirt. Why the hell didn't Cassie bury Ringer? Would make more sense for me to hunker down with the kids. And besides, Sullivan would probably leap at the chance. I heave myself upright. I'm vertical maybe 5 seconds, and then I'm down again. It's too late. I have to be within range of their infrared by now. A pair of boots pounds toward me. A pair of hands haul me up. Cassie throws my arm around her neck and pulls me forward as I swing my bad leg around, hop with my good one, swing the bad one. But she bears most of the load. Who needs a 12th system when you have a heart like Cassie Sullivan's? We fall into the bay of the garage and Cassie hurls a blanket at me. The kids are already covered and I shout, "Not yet!" Their body heat will gather beneath the material, defeating the purpose. Wait for my go, I tell them. Then to Cassie, you've got this. Incredibly, she smiles at me and nods. I know.
Chapter 54. Cassie. Now! Ben shouts, probably too late. The chopper thunders over us. We dive under the blankets and I begin the countdown. How will I know when it's time? I asked Ringer. After 2 minutes. Why two? If we can't do it in 2 minutes, it can't be done. What did that mean? I didn't ask, but now I suspect that two is just a random number she pulled out of her ass. I counted out anyway. 58-1000, 59-1000, 60-1000. The old blanket stinks of mildew and rat piss. I can't see a damn thing. What I hear, all I hear, is the helicopter, which sounds like it's 2 feet away. Has it landed? Has the recovery team been deployed to check out the mysterious mound of dirt that looks suspiciously like a grave? The questions roll across the landscape of my mind like a slow, crawling fog. It's hard to think when you're counting. Maybe that's why it's a recommended sleeping aid. 92-1000, 93-1000, 94-1000. I'm having trouble breathing. This may have something to do with the fact that I'm slowly suffocating. Somewhere around 75-1000, the chopper's engines had revved down. Not stopped, just the pitch and volume dipped. Landed? At 95-1000, the engines pick up again. Do I stay here until Ringer's arbitrary 2 minutes are up, or do I listen to that wise little voice screeching in my ear, "Go, go, 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 now!" At 97-1000, I go. And damn, does the world seem blindingly bright after bursting from my woolen cocoon. Clear the bay doors, sharp right, then fields, trees, stars, road, and chopper 6 feet off the ground. And rising. Crap. Beside the Ringer hole, a whirling shadow by the broken earth and another shadow that moves so slow in comparison, it seems as if it isn't moving at all. Ringer sprung her trap on the search party. Sayonara, search party. I'm running full out toward the Black Hawk, and the supplies in my uniform make me feel like I'm weighed down with bricks, the rifle bouncing against my back, and shit, it's too far away and rising too fast. Pull up, Cassie, pull up. You're not going to make it. Time for plan B, only we don't have a plan B. And 2 minutes. What was that, Ringer? If you're the tactical genius in this operation, then we're so totally screwed. And the space shrinks between me and the chopper while its nose dips slightly. And how good's your vertical, Sullivan? I leap. Time stops. The chopper hangs suspended like a mobile above my fully extended body. Even my toes are pointed. And there is no sound anymore or draft from the blades lifting the Black Hawk up or pushing my body down. There was this little girl. She's gone now. With skinny little arms and bony little legs and a head topped with bouncy red curls and a very straight nose with a special talent only she and her daddy knew about. She could fly. My outstretched fingers banged on the edge of the open cargo doorway. I caught hold of something cold and metallic, and I locked down on it with both hands as the chopper soared straight up and the ground sped away from my kicking feet. 50 feet up, 100, and I sway back and forth, trying to swing my foot onto the platform. 200 feet, 250, and my right hand slips. I'm hanging on with just the left now, and the noise is deafening, so I can't hear myself scream. Looking down, I see the garage and the house across the street from the garage, and down the road the black smudge of where Grace's house once stood. Starlight-bathed fields and woods shining silver gray, and the road stretching from horizon to horizon. I'm going to fall. At least it will be quick. Splat, like a bug against a windshield. My left hand slips. Thumb, pinky, and ring fingers thrum empty air. I'm attached to the chopper by 2 fingers now. Then those fingers slide off too. Chapter 55. I've learned it is possible to hear yourself scream over the jet engines of a Black Hawk helicopter after all. Also, it isn't true that your life flashes before your eyes when you're about to die. The only things that flash before mine are bear's eyes, unblinking plastic, bottomless, soullessly soulful. There's several hundred feet to fall. I fall less than one, jerking to a stop so hard my shoulder's nearly ripped from its socket. I caught nothing to abort the plunge. Someone caught me. And now that someone is hauling me on board. I'm slung face down onto the floor of the chopper's hold. First it's like, I'm alive! Then it's all, I'm going to die! Because whoever rescued me is yanking me upright, and I have basically 3 choices. 4 if you include the false choice of the gun, because firing a gun within the metallic cocoon of a helicopter is a very bad idea. I've got my fists, the pepper spray contained in one of the 29 million pockets of my new uniform, or the hardest, most terrifying weapon in all of Cassie Sullivan's formidable arsenal, her head. I whip around and smash my forehead into the center of the face, crunch, breaking a nose, and then there is blood. As in, a lot of blood, practically a geyser, but the blow has no other effect. She doesn't move an inch. She doesn't even blink. She's been... What word did she use to describe the incredibly creepy and scary thing Vosh did to her? Enhanced. Easy there, Sullivan, Ringer says, turning her head to spit out a golf ball-sized wad of blood. Chapter 56. Ringer. I push Sullivan down into a seat and shout in her ear, "Get ready to bail!" She doesn't say anything, just stares up into my bloody face uncomprehendingly. Arteries cauterized by the microscopic drones swarming in my bloodstream, pain receptors shut down by the hub. I may look horrible, but I feel great. I climb over her to the cockpit and plop into the co-pilot's seat. The pilot recognizes me immediately. It's Lieutenant Bob. The same Lieutenant Bob whose finger I broke in my escape with razor and teacup. "Holy shit!" he shouts. "You! Back from the grave!" I yell, which is literally true. I jab my finger at our feet. "Put her down! Fuck you!" I react without thinking. The hub decides for me. And that's the terrifying thing about the 12th system. I don't know anymore where it ends and I begin. Not fully human, not wholly alien. Neither, both. Something loosed within me, something unbound. Afterward, I realize the brilliance of it. The most precious commodity of any pilot is his sight. I rip off his helmet and shove my thumb into his eye. His legs kick, his hand flies up to grab my wrist, and the chopper's nose dips. I intercept his hand and guide it back to the stick as I pour myself into him. Where there is panic, calm. Where there is fear, peace. Where there is pain, comfort. I know he won't go all kamikaze on us because no part of him is hidden from me. I know the desires he would deny even to himself, and there is no desire within him to die. As there is no doubt in his mind that he needs me to live. Chapter 57. Zombie was right all those months ago. As sanctuaries in the apocalypse went, the caverns of West Liberty were damn hard to beat. No wonder the silencer priest claimed them for his own. Gallons of fresh water, an entire chamber stocked with dry and canned goods. Medical supplies, bedding, cans of heating fuel, kerosene, and gasoline. Clothes, tools, and enough weapons and explosives to outfit a small army. A perfect place to hide, even cozy, if you ignore the smell. The Ohio caverns reeked of blood. The largest chamber was the worst. Deep underground and humid with very little ventilation. The smell and the blood had nowhere to go. The stone floor still shimmers crimson in our lights. A slaughter took place here. Either the false priest picked up the spent shell casings or he sliced his victims open one by one. We find a spot against the wall with a sleeping bag, a stack of books, including a well-worn Bible, a kerosene lantern, a bag full of toiletries, and several rosaries. Of all the places he could bunk, he chose this spot, Zombie breathes. He's pressing a cloth against his face to filter the air. Crazy SOB. Not crazy, Zombie, I tell him. Sick. Infected with a virus before he was even born. That's the best way to think of it. Zombie nods slowly. You're right. That is the best way to think of it. We've left Bob the pilot with Cassie and the two kids in another chamber, after packing and bandaging his wound and giving him antibiotics and a massive dose of morphine. He's in no condition to fly any farther tonight. Just getting us as far as the caverns exceeded his endurance, but I sat beside him and kept him focused and calm, his ballast and his anchor. Zombie and I retreat toward higher ground, and he navigates the narrow passages with one hand on my shoulder, awkwardly swinging his bad leg, wincing with every step. I make a mental note to check the wound before I leave. The round should probably be removed, but I worry the procedure will do more harm than good. Even with antibiotics, the risk of infection is high, and nicking a major artery would be catastrophic. Only two ways down here, he says. That works for us. We can block off one end, which leaves a single entrance to watch. Right. Think we're far enough from Urbana? Far enough from Urbana to what? To avoid getting vaporized. He smiles, and his teeth shine unusually bright in the lamplight. I shake my head. I don't know. You know what's scary, Ringer? You seem to know more than any of us, but whenever a critical question comes up, like the issue of whether or not we'll be vaporized in a couple of days, you never know the answer. The path is steep. He needs to rest. I'm not certain he knows that I can feel what he feels through the conduit of his hand touching my shoulder. I don't know if that would comfort or terrify him. Maybe both. Hang on, zombie. Acting as if I need to catch my breath. Gotta rest a minute. I lean against an outcropping. At first, he tries to be tough and stay upright. But after a minute or two, he can't maintain the act. He eases himself onto the floor, grunting from the effort. Since we met, his near-constant companion has been pain, most of which I have delivered. Does it hurt? He asks. What? He points at my nose. Sullivan said she got you good. She did. It's not even swollen, and no black eyes. I look away. Thank Vosh. Kind of hoping you'll thank him for all of us. I nod. Then I shake my head. Then I nod again. Zombie knows he's on dangerous ground. He moves to safer territory quickly. And it doesn't hurt? There's no pain? I look right into his eyes. No, zombie, there's no pain. I squat, resting on my heels, and set the lamp on the floor. The space between us, less than a foot, feels more like a mile. Did you notice on our way in? I ask. Somebody built an outdoor shower. I think I'm going to take one before I leave. Blood's caked on my face. There's dirt in my hair, and damp earth is smeared over every exposed inch. An eternity passed after Zombie buried me. I can still see their faces blank with astonishment and horror as I burst from the grave, the two recruits sent back to pick up the squad mates they left behind to kill us. Sullivan had a similar look after she smashed her head into my nose. I've become the stuff of wonder and nightmares. So I want to be clean. I want to feel human again. Won't matter if the water's cold? Zombie asks. I won't feel it. He nods like he understands. It should be me. Not in the shower. Haha, I mean going with you. Not Cassie. I'm sorry, Ringer. He pretends to study the cave's jagged teeth jutting down over our heads, a dragon's mouth frozen in mid-chomp. What was he like? I mean, that guy, you know. I know. Tough, funny, smart. He loved to talk, and he loved baseball. What about you? Zombie asks. I have no opinion about baseball. Not what I meant, and you know it. It doesn't matter, I answer. He's dead. Still matters. It's something you'd have to ask him. I can't. He's dead, so I'm asking you. What do you want from me, zombie? Seriously, what do you want? He was kind to me. He lied to you. Not when it mattered. Not about the important things. He betrayed you to Vosh. He sacrificed his life for me. He murdered Teacup. That's it, zombie. No more. I rise. I shouldn't have told you. Why did you? Because you're my bullshit-free zone. But I'm not giving him that. Because you're the one I came out of the wilderness for. No, not that either. And not because you're the one person I still trust. Instead, I say, you caught me at a weak moment. Well, then the Ben Parrish smile. The smile it almost hurts to look at. If you're ever in need of an egotistical prick, I'm your man. He waits two breaths, then adds, oh, come on, Ringer, come on! Smile! That joke works on so many levels, it isn't even funny. You're right, I answer. It's not funny. Chapter 58. I slide out of my clothes beside the outdoor shower. The overhead container was empty, so I had to fill it from the cistern next to the welcome center. The cistern must have weighed over 100 pounds, but I hoisted it onto my shoulder as if it weighed no more than Little Nugget. I know the water is cold, but like I told Zombie, I'm protected by Vosh's gift. I feel nothing but wetness. The water bears away the blood and dirt. I run my hands over my stomach. He sacrificed his life for me. The boy in the doorway lit up by a funeral pyre, carving letters into his arm. I touch my shoulder. The skin is smooth and soft. The 12th system repaired the damage minutes after I inflicted it. I am like the water that runs over me, immune to permanence, recycling endlessly. I am water. I am life. The form may change, but the substance stays the same. Strike me down, and I will rise again. Vincit qui patitur. I close my eyes and see his. Sharp, glittering, brilliant blue, eyes that knife deeper than your bones. You created me, and now your creation is coming back for you. Like rain to parched earth, I come back. And water bears away the blood and dirt. Chapter 59. Cassie. Here's something to chew on. Here's the charming truth about the world the others are creating. My little brother has forgotten the alphabet, but he knows how to make bombs. A year ago, it was crayons and coloring books, construction paper and Elmer's glue. Now it's fuses and blasting caps, wires and black powder. Who wants to read a book when you can blow something up? Beside me, Megan watches him the way she watches everything else, silently. She clutches Bear to her chest, another silent witness to the evolution of Samuel J. Sullivan. He's working with Ringer, the two of them kneeling next to each other, a two-person assembly line. I guess they took the same IED class at camp. Ringer's damp hair shines like a black snake's skin in the lamplight. Her ivory skin gleams. A couple of hours ago, I smashed my forehead into her nose and broke it, but there's no swelling. No sign I inflicted any damage at all. Unlike my nose, which will be crooked till the day I die. Life is not fair. How'd you get on that chopper? I ask her. It's been bugging me. Same way you did, she answers. I jumped. The plan was for me to jump. Which you did. You were hanging on by a fingernail, she said. I didn't think I had a choice at that point. In other words, I saved your worthless, freckly, crooked-nosed ass. What are you bitching about? Not that my nose has an ass. I really should stop putting thoughts into other people's heads. She tucks a strand of her silky locks behind her ear. There's something so effortlessly and inexplicably graceful about the gesture that it borders on creepy. What the hell happened to you, Ringer? Of course, I know what happened to her. The gift, Evan called it. All human potential times 100. I have the heart to do what I have to do, Evan told me once. He neglected to say at the time he meant that both literally and figuratively. He neglected to say a lot of things, the bastard who doesn't even deserve rescuing. What the hell am I thinking? Looking at Ringer's delicate fingers dance in the complicated ballet of constructing a bomb, I realize the scariest thing about her isn't what Vosh has done to her body. It's what that amped-up body has done to her mind. When you tear down our physical limitations, what happens to our moral ones? I'm pretty certain the pre-enhanced Ringer couldn't have single-handedly massacred 5 heavily armed, well-trained recruits. I also suspect pre-enhanced Ringer couldn't have shoved her thumb into another human being's eyeball. That required a leap in evolution of an entirely different kind. Speaking of Bob,
you people are whacked, he goes.
He's been watching, too, with his good eye. No, Bob, Ringer says without looking up from her task. The world is whacked. We just happen to be occupying it.
Not for long. You won't get within 100 miles of the base.
His panicky voice fills the little chamber, which smells of chemicals and old blood.
They know where you are. There's a fucking GPS on that chopper, and they're coming after you with everything they've got.
Ringer looks up at him. A flip of the bangs, a flash of the dark eyes. That's what I'm counting on. How much longer? I ask her. Everything depends on our reaching the base before sunrise. A couple more and we'll be ready.
Yeah! Bob shouts. Get ready! Say your prayers because it's going down, Dorothy!
She's not a Dorothy! Sam shouts at him.
You're a Dorothy!
You shut the fuck up!
Bob yells back.
Hey, Bob!
I call over to him. Leave my brother alone! Bob's all balled up in the corner, quivering, sweating, the buttload of morphine apparently not enough. He couldn't be older than 25. Young by pre-arrival standards, middle-aged by the new ones.
What's gonna stop me from crashing us into a fucking cornfield, huh?
He demands.
What you gonna do? Punch out my other eye?
Then he laughs. Ringer ignores him, which throws gas on Bob's fire.
Not that it matters. Not that you have a chance in hell. They'll cut you down the minute we land. They'll carve you up like fucking Halloween pumpkins. So make your little bombs and hatch your little plots. You're all dead meat.
You're right, Bob, I tell him. That pretty much sums it up. I'm not being snarky, for once. I mean every word. Assuming he doesn't crash us into a cornfield, assuming we aren't shot down by the armada that's surely on its way, assuming we aren't captured or killed inside the camp by the thousands of soldiers who will be expecting us, assuming by some miracle Evan is still alive and by some bigger miracle I find him, and assuming Ringer kills Vosh, the closest thing our species has to the indestructible cockroach, we still have no exit strategy. We're buying a one-way ticket to oblivion. And those tickets don't come cheap, I think while I watch my Sams put the finishing touches on a bomb. Oh, Sam. Crayons and coloring books, construction paper and glue, teddy bears and footy pajamas, swing sets and storybooks and everything else we knew you'd leave behind, though not this soon, not this way. Oh, Sam, you have the face of a child, but the eyes of an old man. I was too late. I risked everything to rescue you from the end, but the end already had you. I push myself to my feet. Everybody looks at me except Sam. He's humming softly, slightly off-key. Theme music to build explosives by. He's the happiest I've seen him in a long time. I need to talk to Sam, I tell Ringer. That's fine, she says. I can spare him. I wasn't asking for permission. I grab his wrist and pull him from the chamber into the narrow corridor, up the path toward the surface until I'm sure they can't hear us. Fairly sure, anyway. Ringer can probably hear a butterfly beating its wings in Mexico.
What is it?
He asks, frowning, or maybe frowning. I didn't bring a light. I can barely see his face. That's a damn good question, kid. Once again, here I go, half-cocked and winging it. This should be a speech weeks in the making.
You know I'm doing this for you, I tell him.
Doing what?
Leaving you.
He shrugs.
Shrugs!
You're coming back, aren't you? There it is. The invitation to a promise I cannot make. I take his hand and say,
Remember the summer you chased the rainbow?
He looks up at me, utterly baffled.
Well, maybe not. I think you were still in diapers.
We were in the backyard and I had the sprayer. When the sunlight hit the water, you know, a rainbow. And I was making you chase it, telling you to catch the rainbow. I'm about to let loose with some waterworks of my own.
Kind of cruel when I think about it.
Why are you thinking about it then?
I don't want you to forget things, Sam.
Things like what?
You need to remember it wasn't always like this.
Making bombs and hiding in caves and watching everyone you know die.
I remember things, he argues. I remember what Mommy looked like now.
You do? He nods emphatically. I remembered right before I shot that lady. Something in my expression must give me away. I'm guessing a mixture of shock and horror and a sadness that has no bottom. Because he turns on his heel and barrels back to the weapons chamber only to return after a minute with Bear in his arms. Oh, that goddamned Bear.
No, Sams, I whisper.
He brought you luck last time.
He's Megan's now.
No, he's mine. He's always been mine.
Holding him out to me.
I gently push Bear back into his chest.
And you need to keep him. I know you've outgrown him. I know you're a soldier or a commando or whatever now. But one day, maybe there'll be a little kid who really needs Bear because, well, just because.
I kneel at his feet.
So hang on to him, understand? You take care of him and protect him and don't let anybody hurt him. Bear is very important to the grand scheme of things. He's like gravity. Without him, the universe would fall apart.
He stares at his big sister's face for a long, silent moment. Memorize it, Sams. Study every bruised, scratched up, scarred, crooked inch of it. So you don't forget. So you never forget. Remember my face no matter what. No matter what.
That's crazy, Cassie, he says. And for an instant, and only an instant, the little boy is back. And I see in his now face, his then face, hysterical with wonder and laughter, chasing rainbows.
Chapter 60, Ringer. I hop down from the chopper. Zombie watches me sling the rucksack over my shoulder and says, "All done?"
"Done.
How many you got left?" Nodding at the bag. "5. He frowns. "Think it'll be enough?"
"It'll have to be, so yes."
"Time to go then," he says. "Time to go." Our eyes meet. He knows what I'm thinking. "I won't make that promise," he says.
"You can't come after me, Zombie."
"I won't make that promise," he says again.
"And you can't stay here. After the mothership drops the bombs, head south. Use the trackers I gave you. They won't mask you from IR or hide you from silencers, but..."
"Ringer."
"I'm not finished."
"I know what to do."
"Remember Dumbo. Remember what coming after me cost. Some things you have to let go, Zombie. Some things..."
He grabs my face in both his hands and kisses me hard on the mouth.
"One smile," he whispers. "One smile and I'll let you go."
My face in his hands and my hands on his hips. His forehead touching mine and the stars turning over us and the earth beneath us and time slipping, slipping.
"It wouldn't be real," I tell him. "At this point, I don't care."
I push him away. Gently. I still do. Chapter 61. The bombs have been loaded. Time to load Bob.
"You think I'm not ready to die?" he asks me as I escort him to his seat.
"I know you're not." I strap him in. Through the open hatch, I can see Sullivan with Zombie, and she's trying very hard to stay composed. Cassie Sullivan is sentimental and immature and self-absorbed beyond belief, but even she knows we're crossing a threshold that we can't come back from.
"No plan," she whispers to Zombie.
She doesn't want me to hear her, and I don't really want to. Vosh's gift is a curse, too.
"Nothing fated.
No meant to be," Zombie says. "No plan, nothing fated, no meant to be." Like a catechism or an affirmation of faith, or faith's opposite. She rises on her toes and kisses his cheek. "You know what I'm gonna say now." Zombie smiles. "He'll be fine, Cassie." He grabs her hand and squeezes hard.
"With my life."
Her response is immediate and fierce.
"Not with your life, Parrish. With your death."
She notices me over his shoulder and pulls her hand away. I nod. "It's time." I turn to our one-eyed pilot.
Boot her up, Bob.
Chapter 62. The ground recedes. Zombie dwindles, becomes a black dot against gray earth. The road swivels to the right like the second hand of the terrestrial clock, marking the time that's lost, the time that cannot be taken back. Turning north, climbing, the explosion of countless stars, and the burning center of the galaxy a backdrop for the mothership glowing phosphorescent green, its belly full of the bombs that will erase the last remaining footprint of civilization. How many cities in the world? 5,000? 10? I don't know, but they do. In less than 3 hours, in the utter silence of the void, the bay doors will slide open and thousands of guided missiles carrying warheads no larger than a loaf of bread will vomit forth. A single orbit around the planet. After 10 centuries, all we had built will be gone in a day. The debris will settle. Rains will bathe the scorched and barren ground. Rivers will revert to their natural course. Forests and meadows and marsh and grasslands will reclaim what was cut and raised, filled and leveled and buried beneath tons of asphalt and concrete. Animal populations will explode. Wolves will return from the north and herds of bison, 30 million strong, will again darken the plains. It will be as if we never were. Paradise reborn. And there is something ancient inside me, buried deep in the memory of my genes, that rejoices.
A savior? Vosh asked me. Is that what I am?
Across the aisle, Sullivan is watching me. She looks so small in that oversized uniform, like a little kid playing dress-up. How odd we ended up together like this. She disliked me from the moment she laid eyes on me. About her, I just thought there wasn't much there. I'd known a lot of girls like Cassie Sullivan, shy but arrogant, timid but impulsive, naive but serious, sensitive but flippant. Feelings matter to her more than facts, particularly the fact that her mission is a futile one. Mine is hopeless. Both are suicidal. And neither is avoidable. My headset crackles. It's Bob.
We've got company.
How many?
6. I'm coming up.
Sullivan starts when I unbuckle. I pat her shoulder on my way to the co-pilot seat. It's okay, we were expecting this. Up front, Bob points out the incoming choppers on his screen.
Orders, boss?
With only a hint of sarcasm. Engage or evade, or you want me to set her down.
Hold course, they're going to hail.
Wait, they're hailing us. He listens. I have a visual on them now, dead ahead, flying in attack formation.
Okay, he says, turning to me. 3 guesses, first 2 don't count.
They're ordering us to land.
Now it's my turn. Up yours, right?
I shake my head.
Say nothing, keep flying.
You do realize they'll shoot us down, right?
Just let me know when they're in range.
Oh, so that's the plan. We're shooting them down, all 6 of them.
My bad, Bob. I meant let me know when we're in range. What's our speed?
140 knots. Why?
Double it.
I can't double it. Max is 190.
Then max it. Same heading.
Right down your throats. Here we come. We leap forward. A shiver ripples down the chopper's skin. The engines howl. The wind screams in the hold. After a couple of minutes, even Bob's unenhanced eye can see the lead chopper coming straight at us.
Ordering us down again, Bob yells. In range in 30. What's going on?
Sullivan's head pokes between us. Her mouth drops open when she focuses on what's bearing down.
20,
Bob calls.
20 what?
She shouts.
They'll pull up, I'm sure of it.
Pull up or break formation to let us pass. They won't shoot us down either, because of the risk. The risk is the key, Vosh told me. By now he knows about the dead strike team and the commandeered chopper. Constance wouldn't have done that, and Walker has been captured. That leaves just one person who could have pulled off something like this. His creation.
10 seconds!
I close my eyes. The hub,
my ever-faithful companion, shuts down my senses, plunging me into that space without sound, without light. I'm coming, you son of a bitch. You wanted to create a human without humanity. Now you're going to get one.
4. The Last Day. Chapter 63. Evan Walker. The room into which they threw him was small, bare, and very cold. When they pulled off the hood covering his head, the severity of the light blinded him. Instinctively, he covered his eyes. One of his captors demanded his clothes. He stripped down to his briefs. No, those too. He dropped the shorts and kicked them toward the doorway, where the two boys wearing camouflage stood. One of them, the younger one, giggled. They stepped out of the room. The door clanged shut. The cold and the silence and the blaring light were intense. He looked down and saw a large drain in the center of the tiled floor. He looked up, and as if looking up was the signal, water burst from the overhead sprayers. He staggered back against the wall and covered his head with his hands. The cold bored into him, through skin to muscle to bone to marrow, until his knees buckled and he sank to the floor, head balanced on his upraised knees, arms wrapped around his legs. A disembodied voice boomed in the tiny space. Stand up. He ignored it. Instantly, the water changed from freezing cold to scalding hot, and Evan leapt to his feet, mouth hanging open in shock and pain. The blazing light cut through the steaming mist and splintered into countless rainbows that bobbed and spun, radiant against the colorless tile. The spray turned cold again, then abruptly stopped. He leaned against the wall, gasping, and the voice boomed. Don't touch the wall. Stand with your feet together and your hands at your sides. He pushed off from the wall. Never, not even on the bitterest winter day on the farm when the wind roared across the fields and tree branches broke under the weight of ice. Never had he been this cold. This cold was a living thing, a beast with his body clamped between its jaws, and those jaws were slowly crushing him. Every instinct told him to move. Physical exertion would increase his blood pressure, raise his heart rate, speed warmth to his extremities. Don't move! He couldn't concentrate. His thoughts spun like the uncountable rainbows let loose by the spray. Closing his eyes might help. Don't close your eyes! The cold. He imagined the water on his naked body, freezing solid, ice crystals forming in his hair. He will go into hypothermic shock. His heart will stop. His hands balled into fists and he dug his nails into his palms. The pain will focus his mind. Pain always does. Open your hands. Open your eyes. Don't move. He obeyed. If he did everything they said, followed every order, complied with every demand, they would have no excuse to use the one weapon for which he had no defense. He would bear any burden, endure any hardship, suffer any torment if that suffering added a single moment to her life. He had been willing to sacrifice an entire civilization for her sake. His own life was infinitely small and meaningless, the costless price. He always knew, from the day he found her half buried in the snow, what saving her meant, what loving her meant. The cell door slamming shut, the death sentence handed down. But they had not brought him to this room of cold and shattered light to kill him. That would come later. After they had broken his body and crushed his will and dissected his mind down to the last synapse. The undoing of Evan Walker had begun. Chapter 64. Hours passed. His body grew numb. He seemed to float inside his own insensate skin. The white wall in front of him stretched to infinity. He was floating in an endless nothingness, and his thoughts became fragmented. His mind, starved for stimuli, flung out random images from his childhood. Christmases with his human family, sitting with his brothers on the front porch, squirming in the pew at church, and much older scenes from a different life. The breathtaking sunsets of a failing star, skimming over mountain ranges 3 times the height of the Himalayas in silver flyers, cresting a hill and seeing beneath him a valley devoid of life, the crop destroyed by the ultraviolet poison of their dying sun. If he closed his eyes, the voice screamed at him to open them. If he swayed, the voice screamed for him to stand still. But it was only a matter of time before he collapsed. He didn't remember falling, or the voice screaming at him to get up. One moment he was upright, the next he was curled into a ball in a back corner of the white room. He had no idea how much time had passed, or if any had passed at all. Time did not exist in the white room. He opened his eyes. A man was standing in the doorway, tall, athletic, with deep-set eyes of striking blue, wearing a colonel's uniform. He knew this man, though they had never met. Knew his face and the face behind the face. Knew his given name, and knew his human name. He had never seen him before. He had known him for 10,000 years. "Do you know why I brought you here?" the man asked him. Evan's mouth opened. His lips cracked and began to bleed. His tongue moved clumsily. He could not feel it.
"Betrayed."
"Betrayed? Oh no, quite the opposite. If there is one word to describe you, it is devoted." He stepped to one side, and a woman wearing a white smock wheeled a gurney into the room. Two soldiers followed. They scooped him from the floor and dumped him onto the gurney. Above him, a single drop of water clung to a sprayer nozzle. He watched it quiver there, unable to look away. A cuff was wrapped around his arm. He didn't feel it. A thermometer was run across his forehead. He didn't feel it. A bright light was shown in his eyes. The woman probed his naked body, pressing on his stomach, massaging his neck and pelvis, and her hands were deliciously warm. "What is my name?" the colonel asked.
"Vosh."
"No, Evan. What is my name?" He swallowed. He was very thirsty.
"It can't be pronounced."
"Try." He shook his head. It was impossible. Their language had evolved as a result of a very different anatomy. Vosh might as well ask a chimpanzee to recite Shakespeare. The woman in the white smock with the warm hand slid a needle into his arm. His body relaxed. He wasn't cold or thirsty anymore, and his mind was clear.
"Where are you from?" Vosh asked.
"Ohio?"
"Before that."
"Can't be pronounced."
"Never mind the name. Tell me where."
"In the constellation Lyra, the second planet from the dwarf star. The humans discovered it in 2014 and named it Kepler-438b. Vosh smiled.
"Of course, Kepler-438b. And of all places where you could choose, why the Earth? Why did you come here?"
Evan turned his head to look at the man. "You already know the answer. You know all the answers." The colonel smiled. His eyes remained hard, though, and humorless. He turned to the woman.
"Get him dressed. It's time for Alice to take a trip down the rabbit hole."
Chapter 65. They brought him a blue jumpsuit and a pair of flimsy white shoes. He told the soldiers watching him,
"It's a lie, what he's told you.
He's like me. He's using you to murder your own kind." The boys said nothing. They nervously caressed the triggers of their guns. "The war you're about to wage isn't real. You'll be killing innocent people, survivors like you, until the last one falls, and then we will kill you. You're participating in your own genocide."
"Yeah, well, you're a fucking piece of infested horse shit," the younger boy blurted out. "And when the commander's done with you, he's giving you to us."
Evan sighed. There was no breaking through the lie, because accepting the truth would break them. Vices are virtues now, and virtues vices. Out of the room, down a long corridor, then descending three flights of stairs to the lowest level. Another long corridor, turning right into a third that spanned the length of the base, passing door after unmarked door, walls of gray cinder block and the sterile glow of fluorescent bulbs. Here, night never fell. Here, the light was everlasting. They came to the last door at the end of the gray tunnel. The hundreds of doors he had passed had been white. This door was green. It swung open as they approached. Inside the room was a reclining chair with straps on the arms and the footrest. an array of monitors and a keyboard. A technician was waiting for him, blank-faced, standing at attention. And Vosh.
You know what this is? He said.
Evan nodded. Wonderland.
And what might I expect to find there?
Very little that you don't already know.
If I knew what I needed to know, I wouldn't have gone to so much trouble to bring you here.
The technician strapped him into the chair. Evan closed his eyes. He knew the uploading of his memories would be physically painless. He also knew it would be psychologically devastating. The human brain has a marvelous capacity to screen and sort experience, protecting itself against the unbearable. Wonderland laid bare experience without the brain's interference, extracting life's record with no interpretation of the data. Nothing in context, no cause and effect, life unfiltered. Without the brain's gift of rationalization, denial, and creating convenient gaps. We remember our lives. Wonderland forces us to relive them. It lasted 2 minutes, 2 very long minutes. From the disaster of silence and light that followed, Vosh's voice. There is a flaw in you. You know this. Something has gone awry, and it's important that we understand the reason. His legs ached. His wrists were worn raw from pulling against the straps.
You will never understand!
You may be right, but it is my human imperative to try. On the monitors, columns of numbers flowed. His life organized into sequences of qubits. What he saw, felt, heard, said, tasted, and thought. And the most complex packets of information in the universe. Human emotion.
It will take some time to run the diagnostics, Vosh said.
Come with me. I want to show you something. He almost fell coming out of the chair. Vosh caught him and gently pulled him upright.
What has happened to you?
He asked Evan. Why are you so weak?
Ask them.
With a nod toward the monitors.
The 12th system crashed? When did it crash?
He'd made a promise. He had to find her before Grace did. Running down the highway, running until the gift within him collapsed, because nothing mattered but the promise. Nothing mattered but her. Evan looked into Vosh's bright, blue, bird-like eyes and said,
What are you gonna show me?
Vosh smiled.
Come and see.
Chapter 66. Turning left off the stairs brought you down the mile-long hallway to Wonderland's green door. Turning right brought you to a dead end, a blank wall. Vosh pressed his thumb against the wall. Gears whined, a seam appeared, and the wall split down the middle. The two halves pulling back to reveal a narrow corridor that faded past the sterile glow of fluorescence into utter black. A recording sprang from a hidden speaker.
Warning, you are entering an area restricted to authorized personnel pursuant to Special Order 11. All unauthorized persons found in this area will be subject to immediate disciplinary action. Warning, you are entering an area restricted to authorized personnel.
The voice followed them into the dark.
Warning.
A smudge of sickly green light bathed the end of the narrow corridor. They stopped there, at a door with no handle. Vosh pressed his thumb against the middle of the door and it swung silently open. He turned to Evan.
We call this Area 51,
Vosh informed him without a trace of irony. Lights flickered on as they crossed the threshold. The first thing that caught Evan's eye was the egg-shaped pod, identical to the pod in which he escaped Camp Haven, except for its size. This pod was twice as large. It dominated half the chamber. Above it, he could see the concrete-reinforced launch shaft that led to the surface.
This is what you wanted to show me?
He didn't understand. He knew Vosh would have a pod on base to return their vessel after the fifth wave was unleashed. In a matter of hours, identical pods would be dispatched from the mothership to retrieve the rest of their embedded people. Why did Vosh want him to see his?
It's unique, Vosh said. There are only 12 others like it in the world. One for each of us.
Why are you doing this? He was losing his temper. Why do you speak in riddles and lies as if I'm one of your human victims? There are more than 12. There are tens of thousands.
No, only 12.
He gestured toward their right. Come over here. I think you're going to find this very interesting.
Hanging at eye level from the ceiling, its skin a glistening greenish gray, a 20-foot-long cigar-shaped object. After the third wave, drones like this one filled the sky.
Vosh's eyes, he had told Cassie. It's how he sees you.
An important component of the war, Vosh said. Important, but not critical. Their loss demanded a bit of improvisation in our hunt for you. You have wondered why it was necessary to enhance an ordinary human, yes?
He was referring to Ringer, but Evan didn't see the connection.
Why did you? The purpose of the drones was not to pinpoint the location of survivors. It was to track you. You and the thousands like you who will abandon your assigned territories in the days ahead, as the fifth wave is launched, and you realize that there will be no rescue. No escape to the mothership.
Evan shook his head. For the first time it occurred to him that Vosh may have gone mad. It was their greatest fear when designing the purification of the Earth. Sharing the body with a human consciousness might prove to be an overwhelming burden, a strain that could not be borne.
Now you are wondering if I am not altogether in my right mind, Vosh said with a small smile. I don't sound like the person you've known most of your 10,000-year-old life. The truth is, we have never met, Evan. Until today, I did not even know what you looked like.
Vosh took him by the elbow, gently, and guided him toward the back of the chamber. Evan's unease deepened. There was something profoundly disturbing about this. He didn't understand why Vosh had brought him.